This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to the Military Times, my new article of. And our first article comes from Military Times magazine, dated November 27, 2024. Criminal probe launched after U.S. Air Force spots drones over U.K. bases. In London, a criminal investigation has been launched after U.S. Air Force reported that drones were spotted flying over English military bases, a British official said Wednesday. The U.S. Air Force reported several incursions occurred in the past week at four bases where the American forces operate. The drones were monitored and unspecified mitigation measures were underway. Ministry of Defense police and local authorities are investigating the activity alongside U.S. forces, Defense Minister Vernon Coker said in Parliament. We take any safety issue seriously and maintain robust measures at Ministry of Defense sites, Coker said. This includes counter-drone capabilities. Anyone convicted could face up to 14 years in prison under national security laws, Coker said. Though it is unclear whether the drones had a hostile intent, the incidents come at a time that saw the most significant escalation of hostilities in Ukraine since Russia's full-scale invasion nearly 3 years ago. Ukraine struck targets inside Russia with intermediate-range missiles supplied by the U.S. and Britain after President Joe Biden authorized use of the weapons. Soon after, President Vladimir Putin said his country had the right to strike nations that allow their weapons to be used against Russia. The flights, which began November 20th and included several incursions Tuesday, were spotted over or near RAF Lincoln Heath, RAF Mildenhall, and RAF Feltwell in eastern England, as well as RAF Fairford in southwestern England. Lincoln Heath is home to the 48th Fighter Wing, which the U.S. Air Force describes as the foundation of its combat capability in Europe. Mildenhall hosts the 100th Air Refueling Wing, and Feltwell is a hub for housing, schools, and other services. Fairford is home to the 501st Combat Support Wing headquarters and the 420th Air Base Squadron. Coker said a drone was also sighted Friday, flying about 250 meters from the Royal Navy flagship aircraft carrier HMS Queen Elizabeth as it entered the German port of Hamburg. In our next article, Navy updates exercise standards for fitness enhancement program. The Navy will not require some sailors to undergo the fitness enhancement program if they do not pass the Navy's body composition assessment portion of the physical fitness assessment. Starting next year, sailors who do not meet the BCA standards but do score an excellent low or above on the physical readiness test, completing the push-up, forearm plank, and cardio portions of the test, will be exempt from undergoing the fitness enhancement program, according to a new Naval Administrative message. The purpose of this exemption is to recognize that some sailors who do not meet the BCA standard are still able to maintain operational readiness, the NAV admin said. Those exempt must complete a nutritional education program, such as Navy's official weight management program, known as ShipShape, or the nutritional self-study course found on official Navy PFA app. Other approved nutrition programs include the Mission Nutrition course offered at Navy Fitness Centers and the Navy Operational Fitness and Fueling System, which provides individualized meal plans. The Command Fitness Leader, or CFL, is in charge of overseeing a sailor's enrollment status in these nutrition programs in the Physical Readiness Information Management System. Upon selecting a nutrition education option, sailors must inform their CFL of which option they choose and provide proof of completion or progressions within 30 days of nutritional enrollment, the NEV admin said. The completed education option is only valid for one PFA cycle. Historically, those who have failed a portion of the PFA have been required to undergo fitness enhancement program, which also requires sailors to undergo nutritional enhancement as well as additional fitness sessions. And in our next article, Trump taps businessman John Phelan to be Navy Secretary. President-elect Donald Trump on Tuesday announced businessman John Phelan as his pick to be the next Secretary of the Navy, lauding him as a leader who will pit the business of the U.S. Navy above all else. If confirmed, Phelan would be the first permanent Navy Secretary without military experience since 2009, when Donald Winter finished up his three-year term in the role. Unlike Winter, who previously had worked within the Pentagon and on the Navy contracts as a major defense firms, Phelan has little public connection to the sea service. Of the 26 men to be confirmed as Navy Secretary over the last 70 years, all but six have been veterans. Phelan is the founder of the private investment firm Rugger Management LLC and a board member at Spirit of America, a military-themed nonprofit. He was also a major donor for Trump's latest reelection campaign. John will be a tremendous force for our naval service members and a steadfast leader in advancing my America First vision, Trump said in a statement. John's intelligence and leadership are unmatched. His incredible knowledge and experience will elevate the lives of the brave Americans who serve our nation. John will deliver real results for our Navy and our country. Phelan is the first service secretary pick to be announced by Trump, who last week nominated former Fox News personality Pete Hegseth to serve as defense secretary. Neither man has experience in the military leadership, although Hegseth did serve in the Army National Guard. If confirmed, Phelan would replace current Navy Secretary Carlos Del Toro, who is expected to step down ahead of Trump's inauguration. Trump has not indicated when he will announce another key Pentagon leadership nominees. The Senate is expected to hold confirmation hearings on Hegseth and Phelan in January, after the new Congress has been seated. Republicans are expected to hold the majority during the next session, easing the path for confirmation of Trump's picks. And in our next article, VA wants $6.6 billion in extra funding for fiscal year 25, down from $12 billion request. Veterans Affairs leaders will ask for $6.6 billion extra in funding for fiscal year 2025 to cover the anticipated increased cost of care and benefits over the next 10 months, down significantly from their initial $12 billion request. Lawmakers were informed of the new budget request Monday. VA Undersecretary for Health Dr. Sharif Inahal said if lawmakers don't approve the extra funding by the end of December, the department could face staffing and equipment problems in the new year. We do think we'll run into problems if we don't get it, he said. It takes time to hire additional people and build capacity, which is why we need the money now, as opposed to later in the fiscal year. Although the new fiscal year began October 1st, Congress has yet to approve the full VA budget for fiscal 2025, which is expected to be above $360 billion. Lawmakers did okay more than $150 billion in advance appropriations for the department last year, allowing operations to continue even in the event of political stalemate over the budget. Whether Congress will approve the latest funding boost remains unclear. On Wednesday, VA planners faced sharp criticism from members of the House Appropriations Committee over their initial budget supplemental request announced in August, which called for $12 billion in additional support. Inahal and other department leaders acknowledged errors in those initial estimates, which were based on increased rates of health care usage and benefits delivery to veterans in recent months. Congress rushed through $3 billion in emergency funding ahead of the end of fiscal 2024 to ensure that veterans' benefits were not interrupted. But most of that money went unspent. Lawmakers accused VA leaders of causing a panic over canceled services with their initial high estimates and demanded reforms in future budget processes. About $2.5 billion in carryover money is included in the new estimates, putting the total of extra funding anticipated by VA planners at around $9 billion. Inahal said nearly $3 billion of that total are focused on staffing issues alone. Another $600 million will be dedicated to equipment upgrades delayed for fiscal year reasons from last year. Reductions in employee costs, outside care referrals, and other anticipated expenses led to the budget revisions, he said. Given the past criticism, Inahal said he expects scrutiny from Congress, but also support when it comes to fully funding veterans' needs. I'm ready and available to come and defend our requests, he said. We'll be available for questions on all our assumptions and the methodology, and we're going to be offering briefings next week to all our communities. The department has seen record-high benefit approvals and medical services usage by veterans of late, thanks in part to changes in eligibility rules approved by Congress in recent years. VA saw its highest level of health care appointments ever in fiscal 2024 at about $127.5 million, up 6% over the previous fiscal year. More than 796,000 veterans have enrolled in VA health care over the last 2 years, up 37% over the previous 2 years. Etta Hall said that growth is expected to continue into next administration, which takes office in late January. Lawmakers must pass a federal budget bill by December 20th, when a short-term funding extension is set to expire. House and Senate leaders have signaled that they will likely push many of the full-year funding decisions until after the next administration and Congress are seated, but could approve some funding boost as a part of a budgetary extension. In our next article, East Coast Marine Drone Squadron conducts first Reaper flight. East Coast Marines will soon have their own MQ-9A Reaper drone training unit after recently completing a successful flight of the platform at Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point, North Carolina. The Marine Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Training Squadron, or VMUT-2, Marine Aircraft Group 14, 2nd Marine Aircraft Wing, conducted the unit's first Reaper flight on November 21st, according to a release. This achievement is more than a technical success. It represents a bold step forward in the future of unmanned aerial systems within the Marine Corps, said Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Borsma, VMUT-2 commander. The unit transitioned from an operational RQ-21A Black Jack Jones squadron to the Corps Reaper Fleet Replacement Squadron in July 2023. According to the release, the unit will now work to build up a full squadron of Reaper drone pilots, maintenance, and staff support. Over the past 5 years, the Corps has gone from leasing a handful of Reaper drones to building a training school, standing up an operational squadron, and implementing a series of upgrades to stretch the capabilities of the platform. The program, known as Extended Range Marine Air Ground Task Force Unmanned Expeditionary Medium Altitude High Endurance Aircraft, or MUX, was previously part of a larger do-it-all drone concept the Marine Corps sought to employ to quarterback all elements of the battle through sensors and communication links. The MUX program seeks to use a single drone to conduct and coordinate and relay reconnaissance, counter-reconnaissance, communication, electromagnetic attack, and conventional munition strikes. But the original request for a new purpose-built drone stalled in Congress, which pushed the Marines to use the legacy Reaper platform to test the new concepts. Though the Reaper drone has been in service for decades, the Corps previously leased the platforms from General Atomics until the service acquired its first Reaper in 2021 at Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Squadron 1, 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing in Yuma, Arizona. The Air Force has operated the MQ-9 since 2007, and as of 2021, had more than 300 of them in its inventory. Earlier this year, the Corps had 10 Reapers in its fleet, with another 10 scheduled for delivery in fiscal year 2025. The MQ-9 has a maximum takeoff weight of 10,500 pounds and a payload capacity of 3,000 pounds. The drone can fly a maximum distance of 2,250 nautical miles. Its maximum flight time is 27 hours, according to Navy data. The Marines established that 7,318 military occupational specialties for MQ-9 pilots in 2020. Within 2 years, the service had trained 38 drone pilots. In December 2023, the Corps announced it had trained 100 pilots for the MQ-9. The MQ-9 is the Corps' first Group 5 drone, which denotes a drone heavier than 1,320 pounds and one with an altitude capability of 18,000 feet and above. In 2022, as the service acquired its first Reapers and trained pilots, then Commandant General David Berger announced that the Corps would stand up its first Reaper squadron in Hawaii and build out 6 unmanned aerial squadrons. In August 2023, Marine Unmanned Aerial Squadron 3 at Kinahoe Bay, Hawaii became the first squadron to reach initial operational capability. In our next article, family alleges sewage leak in military housing sickened four-year-old. A military family in South Carolina is suing Fort Jackson's privatized housing provider after they say sewage contaminated their home, allegedly causing a life-altering bacterial infection in their four-year-old son. Travis Wilson, a chaplain in the Army, and his wife, Jacqueline Wilson, filed a complaint November 18th against Fort Jackson Housing LLC and Balfour Beatty Military Housing Management LLC in the U.S. District Court of South Carolina for negligent maintenance of upkeep of military housing, including sewage outflow and hazardous pollution, according to the complaint. The couple and their six children moved into Fort Jackson Housing in South Carolina on December 22, 2022. At move-in, the couple claims they were given a seven-year maintenance history that didn't accurately represent the house's conditions, specifically that the report failed to mention previous tenants' complaints about sewage backflow, according to the complaint. Shortly after the family moved in, the sewage in the upstairs bedroom overflowed, according to the complaint. Jacqueline Wilson said she reported the problem to maintenance, but after workers arrived, the complaint alleges they closed the bathroom door and told her they would return shortly, never materializing. The sewage began leaking through the ceiling and into the kitchen below, with a putrid smell wafting through the home, the complaint states. When the workers returned at a later unspecified date, they told the family the backflow problem had been fixed, according to the complaint. However, several months later, in March 2023, the complaint states that there was a relapse in sewage leakage with overflow again dripping through the ceiling into the kitchen below. The maintenance workers returned, this time removing the toilet only to leave it in the tub for several weeks, the complaint states. During this time, the couple claims workers left a sewer pipe exposed. Eventually, the family relocated to a hotel. The family returned at a later date to find the toilet still in the tub and a sewage pipe still exposed. At the time of the alleged sewer leaks, the couple's four-year-old son often played on the house floors. In March, around the time of the second leak, the couple noticed he had become lethargic, according to the complaint, when his face began drooping. The couple became alarmed and took him to the emergency room, where they were informed that he was fighting a bacterial infection affecting his brain. Doctors were so worried about the child's brain that they transferred him to a hospital nearly 400 miles away in Birmingham, Alabama, according to the complaint. There is something showing in the scan. You need to be to leave for Birmingham now, doctors informed the Wilson family, according to the complaint. After eight neurologists evaluated the child, they determined the boy was experiencing acute disseminated encephalitis, a rare inflammatory disease that attacks the brain and spinal cord. The doctors also informed the family that the disease is typically caused by a bacterial infection, the complaint states. Common symptoms include fever, fatigue, nausea, vomiting, and sometimes seizures. The disease can also affect motor skills and negatively affect speech and vision. The couple claims in their complaint that the bacterial infection was caused by the sewage overflow from their military housing. They are seeking monetary damages in an amount to be proven at trial, as well as punitive damages. According to the complaint, the couple is also suing the housing organization for the emotional distress they experience as a result of the child's sickness. At the time of the complaint's filing, the child is still dealing with symptoms of the disease. Balfour Beatty Communities, one of the largest privatized military housing companies in the United States, manages Fort Jackson Housing. The health and well-being of our residents is our top priority, a spokesperson for Balfour Beatty Communities said in an email statement. As this matter is a subject of litigation, we will not comment beyond saying that we think the claims are entirely without merit and we will defend ourselves vigorously. Fort Jackson Housing declined to comment. The Wilson family's complaints isn't the first time Balfour Beatty Communities has come under fire for subpar military housing conditions. In December 2021, the housing contractor was ordered to pay over $65 million in fines and restitution for defrauding the U.S. military. Instead of promptly repairing housing for U.S. service members as required, BBC lied about the repairs to pocket millions of dollars in performance bonuses, said Deputy Attorney General Lisa O. Monaco in a Justice Department release at the time. And in case you're just now joining us, you're listening to Military Times. their next article, months after this commissary closed, customers still seek answers. More than 4 months after the military's commissary at Mitchell Field, New York closed, customers still don't know when the store will reopen. This is the only commissary on Long Island. For it to close with basically no information and the only backup plan is to order from the Fort Hamilton store and have it delivered to Mitchell Field 1 day a week is ridiculous, said Robert Craddock, a disabled Navy veteran who shopped at the store regularly for discounted groceries until it closed in early July. I'll be going to my sister's for Thanksgiving. Therefore, the little I need to bring, I will get elsewhere, he said. There are about 36,184 eligible households within 20 miles of the Mitchell Field store, including 4,049 active duty households, according to Sapani Ilabari, spokeswoman for the Defense Commissaries Agency Central Eastern U.S. and Europe regions. In fiscal 2024, members of 6,783 households shopped at the store, including 2,134 active duty households. Installation leadership and commissary agency officials decided to temporarily close the store in early July because of structural issues with the ceiling, Olobari said. The nearest commissary is 31 miles away in Fort Hamilton, New York, which Craddock said is more than an hour's drive away because of traffic and road restrictions. Built in 1954 as a part of the Navy's fuel depot for the former Naval Air Station Brunswick, the store is an aging facility, Olobari said. The closure allows us to conduct safety and structural assessments and develop repair plans necessary to ensure a safe, healthy shopping and working environment for our patrons and employees, she said. Officials are still actively assessing the structural safety of the store. A structural engineering site investigation was completed in late October, she said. Right now, we cannot address reopening until we complete structural assessments, she said. Short and long-term repair plans are currently under review. The Mitchell Field Commissary Building is not that big. It to take now close to 6 months to inspect, said Craddock, the Navy veteran, not to mention that the 5% fees charged by DECA are supposedly for facility maintenance. In late August, Representative Anthony D'Avisito, Republican in New York, and elected officials joined with veterans to call for action to open the commissary's door again, according to a report by News 12 Long Island. Meanwhile, the station reported many veterans were using a nearby food pantry for veterans. As of October 2nd, commissary officials have set up deliveries from the Fort Hamilton commissary so that customers can pick up grocery orders they've placed at least 48 hours in advance on Wednesdays using the commissary click-to-go online system. And in our next article, SOCOM must improve high-risk training, oversight report says. A recent report recommends U.S. Special Operations Command take various actions to reduce high-risk training injuries and deaths, which account for the bulk of non-combat accidents. Released this month, the Government Accountability Office report found that from 2012 to 2022, an estimated 80% of the 3,600 reported on-duty non-combat accidents among Special Operations Forces came from high-risk training. 40% of those incidents were from either parachute or combat dive training. Officials determined that approximately 86% of those incidents were caused by human error. Only about 3% were the result of equipment failure, while another 3% were impacted by environmental factors like extreme heat or cold. Four factors were highlighted as sole or combined contributors that cause human error, including failure to adhere to training standards, standard operation procedures, and other policies and guidance, overconfidence, complacency, or indiscipline, leadership supervision, or poor and improper decision-making. The number of training incidents fluctuated annually, ranging from as low as 120 in 1 year to as high as 402 during another. On average, there were about 259 reported training incidents each year of the study period. Broken down by category, high-risk training incidents between 2012 and 2022 included 972 incidents that involved parachutes, 188 involving weapons or explosives, 99 that occurred during dive operations, and 83 involving tactical vehicles. There were 48 reported fatalities across the study period. One-third of those fatalities happened during parachute training, with more than 60% of the fatalities occurring between fiscal 2012 and fiscal 2015. SOCOM paused parachute training in 2015 as a result, making a series of changes to training policy and operations. Army and Navy special operations personnel performed an average of more than 100,000 parachute jumps each year between 2012 and 2022. Over the course of the study period, personnel assigned to Army and Navy units were involved in 685 and 237 reported parachute training accidents, respectively. During an average year highlighted in the report, Army Special Operations fired off 48 million ammunition rounds and explosives. Around 8 weapons and explosives training incidents were reported each year during that period. Marine Special Operators fired off 7 million rounds and explosives each year, reporting approximately 2 related incidents annually. Army and Navy Special Operators drove an average of 1 million and 250,000 tactical miles, respectively, over a decade measured. Together, the two forces averaged about 3 total tactical vehicle training accidents each year. Navy Special Operators averaged 40,000 dives per year, meanwhile with 7 reported dive training incidents annually. Air Force Special Operators operations divers hit the water 3,600 times each year and report less than 1 dive training incident per year. In looking into the incidents, the report authors dinged SOCOM in several areas. So, Special Operations Command designated 7 high-risk training areas in 2022, Airborne Operations, Combat Dive, Joint Terminal Attack Controller, Mountain Operations, Sniper, Special Operations Urban Combat, and Vertical Lift Operations, but has not yet determined whether those areas account for the greatest risk of training accidents, the authors noted. The command also established a training and assessment program to oversee SOF training in 2022, but it has not yet implemented all components of the assessments. The command has not conducted an analysis of negative safety trends and high-risk training, the report added. The GAO reported offer recommendations to improve special operations training safety. Among those, the report suggests the SOCOM commander should analyze negative safety trends when designating high-risk training areas in future training directive updates. The Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict should reevaluate the training assessment program to determine resources soft service commands need to achieve program goals. The Defense Secretary should ensure that services corresponding Special Operations Forces commanders establish milestones for their units to complete updates to high-risk training policies, including SOCOM's oversight requirements. The Pentagon agreed with all GAO recommendations. Military Times, my name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.